5 o'clock on September 1st. We are meeting via Blue Jeans conference call, and I will call to order the Pacific City Joint Water and Sanitary Authority Board of Directors business meeting. I think that's all I need to say on that. I'll call the roll. Ann Price.
Here.
Cameron Gogas.
Here.
Carlton.
Here.
Tom Donahue.
Here.
For the record, all directors are present. Item 3A, the approval of the August 4th, 2020 business meeting. Any comments or corrections to the meeting minutes?
Hearing none, I will move that we approve the minutes of the August 4th, 2020 business meeting.
I'll second it.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the meeting minutes of the August 4th, 2020 business meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
It has been unanimously approved. Thank you. Item 4, financial report. A, accounts payable for August 4th, August 15th, and August 31st. Any questions on the payable? Tom, please go ahead.
On August 4th, there was a TLC Federal Credit Union check for $4,586. Which loan was that for? That was for a loan, wasn't it?
Yes, that's for the Horn Creek Water Treatment Plant improvements.
Okay. Also, on August 14th, there was almost a $5,800 check to Ken Wald Trucking. What was that for?
That was for sewer lift station maintenance and a small portion of sewer collection system jet rotting that was done by them.
Also on August 14th, there were a couple of entries for Oregon Coast Creative. Was that for website maintenance or?
Michelle?
Correct.
But there were two basic entries from both a 105. One was for $75 twice and one for $375. Were those for individual invoices or?
It was two invoices and they were split by 104, 105.
Okay, thank you. Also on the 14th was a Roto-Rooter service for $1,200. What did we do with that? What did we need them to do? Don't we have facilities to do that kind of work ourselves?
We do, and I'll defer to Rochelle, but I believe we had some step system repairs that were done by them, but.
Right, and we use Roto-Rooter quite a bit as a subcontractor. They've got a pump truck that can handle things that when we are not available, they're quite reliable and quite inexpensive to take care of a lot of pumping for us.
Where are they out? Are they out of Tillamook County or?
Tillamook.
No, those are for the pumps, the step systems, right? For those.
Yeah, sometimes they used to come to the plant as well. And help us move things from one place to another to have it recirculated. But we haven't had that issue since we've got the new wastewater treatment plant. So right now it's just step systems.
So then of all the step systems, from my knowledge, they could grab just about two homes in one truck.
I think it's three. But yeah, we're going to work on improve. I mean, that's something in the future that we're working on to improve.
Isn't that with the truck?
Yes, our truck and a back truck.
That's all the questions I had.
Thank you, Tom. And let me go back to the question you had on 8-4 regarding the TLC Federal Credit Union payment on a loan. That is the airport lift station, I believe, not Horn Creek.
That is correct. It was a line of credit with the, and you're right. Carolyn.
I was watching Michelle's head. I saw no nod. I assumed I was correct.
No, sorry. I just...
I threw you off. But thanks, Carolyn.
Any other questions on the table?
I had some earlier, but I had talked to Rochelle about it, and she's really good at explaining some of the stuff. I'm having a hard time getting used to that Ben Mailing. I'll get that one, but yeah.
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
So last month we talked about doing the payables with a description. We didn't have an opportunity to do that this month, but Rochelle did it for the first 2 weeks of September, and it does now, we have to enter it. I mean, it takes a little more labor, but we did a test run, and I think it will alleviate most of the questions. It will tell you exactly what it is.
Thank you. I was hoping to bring that up, Michelle. It seemed like a very good idea.
Well, I asked Rochelle about that big one, and she said that was probably our last payment.
Not quite. There's one more.
Well, there is one more on that one?
Yes, but it's small.
It's smaller than this one here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And that will do everything for the water treatment plant upgrade.
We hope so. Okay. Yes, we are pretty confident that we have one more payment.
That's the wastewater treatment plant, right?
Correct.
I'm sure we'll have bugs.
No, I think we pretty much worked out the bugs.
So we're bugged out?
I think so. I mean, we have one more payment for electrical, but it's not a bug.
So basically, are we under everything that was done?
Real close. Yeah. 2 weeks.
Okay.
And our new disc filters are in their testing phase, so
yeah.
There's a 30-day test period in which, so far, it's been running continuous with no problems.
Yay.
Cool. All right, I'll entertain.
Okay, if we don't have any other questions about the payables, I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for August 4th, August 15th, and August 31st of 2020.
I second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payable for August 4th, August 15th, and August 31st of 2020. All in favor, say aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is approved unanimously. Thank you. Item 4B, fiscal year report. Is there any questions on the fiscal year report for Kirk or Michelle? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to item 5, the manager's report. Kirk?
Okay, COVID-19 impacts. We haven't had much change this month. We're continuing to keep our office closed to in-person transactions. I would like to at least start discussing and planning to reopen with some protections by appointment only. And some of the options that we're considering started with adjustments to the door so that we could install a payment window, but that doesn't appear to be practical. But there is room near our counter to install a payment window. But we'd also like to investigate any plexiglass type shields that might work as well as we come in. So I intend to do some more research on that this month so that we can discuss this item in more detail next month, unless there's questions today.
Could we have a signage for a mask that you can't enter the building without a mask? Because aren't on most of the doors are entries to businesses?
Yes. Good point, Cameron. Yeah, we'll most likely try to follow suit with some of our business partners are doing. I think there's been some great role models out there.
Have we had any calls as far as opening?
Rochelle or Michelle? Any concerns at all, Rochelle?
No calls as far as when are we going to open. I've had one customer here and there that wants to drop off a check, but it's usually an SDC check, and people don't like to mail $27,000 checks. So we usually meet in the parking lot with our masks, do an exchange.
And that wasn't this month, right?
No.
No.
We don't show any SDCs in our current budget.
No, but we haven't had any calls asking us to open just so they can drop off something. No.
I believe that the governor just extended the state emergency, statewide emergency for COVID to, I think it was November 3rd.
That's correct.
That might be something to research and contemplate in your thinking.
In fact, we were prepared to have Michelle describe what our strategy was if it weren't extended, but I'm sure she would be happy to share any details that the board might like to hear at this point, if there's any questions.
No. Kirk, I think I would, as we get ready for this option, because we know we're in this for the long haul, I'd like to make sure that we have our policies written and that the board has a chance to look at that before we actually do the opening so that we've covered all of our bases. You and I have talked a little bit about clean water services out of Tualatin that has a pretty good program set up, and they've also got notice on their website. There are banners I'm seeing on all types of websites that are popping up before you see anything else that says, here's our COVID standards. I think my concern is I don't want to ever get us in a position where we are trying to enforce someone, a customer wearing a mask, if they don't want to. I just don't see that we have that need for conflict. So whatever we could set up so that if we have a customer that doesn't think they have to do that, that there's just literally no way they could get around what our policy is and so forth, so that we don't put our staff in that position.
And I appreciate that information you provided. And would you like for us to prepare a policy for the board's consideration next month?
I think we can get started on that, although I agree with Ann that we would not open until probably November 3rd, following the governor's extension of the emergency issue. But maybe I misunderstood, Ann.
Well, I just was indicating that I had heard that that was the case, and I think that we need to take that into consideration as we build our own policies. I think one of the problems with rolling out all of these things all over the country has been a lack of consistency and lack of consistent messaging. So I think to the extent that we can reasonably provide service to our customers and provide for the safety of our staff and the customers and be consistent with what's happening around the state, I think that's generally a good thing to do. I also appreciate, Kirk, your comment that you'll be providing us something in writing to consider prior to a discussion and any decision, because I think those are complicated things, and I really appreciate the opportunity to read through that and think about it on my own time, and then get together with you on email and have a little bit of a discussion, or on the phone, whatever. I just think it gives all of us a chance to come together at a board meeting and make a more coherent and complete policy.
I agree. And so, yeah, I think I have clear direction on in how we want to look at going forward.
Then when we can publish something in Tim could get something in the paper, you know, for the locals, and or maybe even on our billing statement. Is that all a possibility in there?
Once we have established the policy, I would expect us to do something like that. Sure.
Are people using the drop-off box more?
Yes.
Yes.
Except when they take down the board meeting notice the day after.
No, I never reported that incident. So, yeah, the Dropbox is working very well.
Oh, good. So nobody's messing with it, or?
No.
And that's checked every day?
Yes.
Even on weekends?
Probably not. Our standby person is the individual responsible for checking it daily, but on the weekend, we're not going to process anything, and I've not heard of any cash deposits going in there, so we feel pretty comfortable with it.
Okay.
Oh, let's see. Really, the only other thing in the manager's report that I wanted to discuss today, unless there's questions, is Dale Pesterfield, one of our operators, passed his Class A CDL test this month. So we're extremely proud of him, and we look forward to having the opportunity to get him to drive our sludge hauling trucks. How many
employees do we have with CDLs?
He would be our second.
Leonard
and Dale are two, so it's extremely valuable for us. If Leonard's out of town, we needed someone who could haul sludge for us.
Is anybody else interested in doing that?
Yeah, there's other operators that are working towards that.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, please tell Dale how much we congratulate him and appreciate him doing that and making it happen. That's really valuable for us, and we'd like him to know that we appreciate it.
Yeah, it's no easy task, and hearing him describe the testing process will help his fellow operators as well. And Carolyn, that's all I had for the manager. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I did want to go through the graphs briefly. Our water production was down from a year ago, but fairly similar to a month ago. Wastewater inflow and flows were slightly up this month, which is a really good sign. Our billed water was similar to slightly less than last month. And our billed sewer, though, was almost identical. So I think our water demands were very similar in August as they were in July. And our non-revenue water was down below 10%, which is where we want to be. I'm happy to answer.
So typically, it's typically August our most busiest month, or July.
I would think it's July or August, either one. This being
actually,
the first summer.
Actually, sometimes it's September.
Is it?
Really? Yeah, sometimes because of Labor Day weekend. So August is, July is busy because of the 4th of July. August, it fell about $1,000 in revenue. And September, not every year, depends on the rainfall, but September can be a little bit higher.
That's one of the nice things about these graphs is we can see back over this year and 2 years prior for comparative purposes. I really like this way of displaying this, Kurt.
I do too.
Thank you.
I was impressed with the work you did on the bollards around the Beachy lift station. I thought that it looks good, it looks secure. People are still parking in front of them, but it looks like you've got the room you need to work on the lift station if you need to.
We'll protect them. I'm afraid somebody's going to smack them.
Yeah, that too.
And I think so far we're very happy with the way they look. And yeah, if they do get pushed over some, then we'll have to perhaps set them a little more solid into the ground, but Yeah, I think it's going to work well for our purposes unless someone really drives right into them.
Well, are we having a problem with people parking there by the airport lift station?
We would if we don't have anything there at all. But in the past, we've always used the candlestick barricades with emergency tape, and it just looked like we were a construction site in progress there. And I think this is a much cleaner look for the neighborhood.
So that's the Beachy Bridge one. I think Cameron was asking about the airport lift station.
Because
on occasion we do have, over the years, we have had people ignore the almost literally flashing red signs that say, don't park in front of this. But as I have driven around town, which hasn't been a whole lot, but I haven't noticed people parking directly in front of it. I don't know if anybody else has.
It hasn't been an issue this year. It was one of the sites, though, that we were looking at when we were ordering signs to update, particularly the federal crime warning sign, I think is the most effective.
And this, on your manager's report, too, Tom, you'll see more detail on that Zwall trucking check you were asking about. There's some real detail in here about how many lift stations and how many feet of sewer main got cleaned and that sort of thing. So you might be interested in that as well.
I just scrolled past that and noticed that. So thank you. That was informative.
All right, anything else, Kirk?
That's all I had.
All right, thank you. Item 6, unfinished business, waste and wastewater master plan.
All right, I forgot my door was open and cars were driving by.
Up there, then.
As far as the master plan, we've completed all of our water and system modeling, our wastewater flow meters. We've been able to review some of the wastewater flow meter data, and we've requested that the engineers look closely at that data and have the contractor make some adjustments so that it's more reflective of what our usage actually is at the airport, lift station. Other than that, our other two flow meters seem to be recording accurately, and they're giving us a clear indication of the high demand periods within the day. We've also are getting ready to start an assessment for seismology, which was included in the package, the master plan description. And a site visit is to be scheduled here in the near future so that we can identify our critical infrastructure and what would be most vulnerable to an earthquake. Other than that, they're continuing to look at population projections made by various sources. Yes, Cameron?
When they do the seismology or whatever, are they going to be checking our tanks, our reservoirs?
Yes, they'll certainly focus on those and the main transmission pipelines that come from those tanks and how it delivers water to our community.
And our bridges?
They'll identify any major infrastructure that could be a weak link that would take out a lot of people in the event of an earthquake.
So our bridges and lift stations?
I believe those will also be considered key components. The on-site visit has not yet been scheduled, but I'm anticipating it to happen in September. Tom?
If memory serves, the incoming line from Horn Creek was bore piped under the river just above or just east of the Woods Bridge, and our sewer and water lines going over the Beachy Bridge would seem to be a critical weakness for both systems, for the Spit area as well as Cape Kiwanda area. Do you think it's practical to kind of maybe plan to bore pipe both of those water and sewer lines that are going with the bridge under the river?
Tom, I haven't discussed that in detail with the engineer yet. I hear exactly what you're saying. And I do believe that having redundant capabilities of crossing the river at both bridges is going to be something that our engineers are going to look closely at. And they, I'll keep that suggestion in mind for when I have those discussions with the engineers, so that it's something that we can consider, perhaps even a redundant pipeline crossing. But currently, I feel pretty comfortable with the fact that we have two water supply sources on the west side of the bridge. But certainly coming from Horn Creek to serve the Heights is something that I think we're going to want to make sure that that area is protected.
It would seem to me that those particular lines, both sewer and water, that are in the pump stations on each side of the bridge, there would be not so much the pump stations, but at least the lines crossing the bridge would be very vulnerable in earthquakes or a tsunami situation, especially. So it would probably be a good idea to at least get some ideas for a future project or something to. In a bore pipe situation, I think we are much safer in protecting that critical area.
I agree completely, and the more we talk about it, the more I understand your concerns. We'll certainly be addressing that as part of the master plan.
Good idea.
Are there any other questions?
All right, hearing none, we'll move on to the next item under new business. First is our workshop follow-up. In your packet, you have the Mr. Flynn summary. Our board workshop was with our consultant, Ryan Fleming, of HR Solutions, and I feel like that was very successful and helpful. Tom, I hope you'll get to listen to the recording of it when you have a chance. For the record, earlier this summer, board members had vocalized the absence of employee input in the authority manager's evaluation process and wondered what options might be available and doable. And so during this workshop, we spent a couple hours discussing the options with Mr. Fleming. He educated us on the options and the pros and cons of such actions, and after thoroughly discussing the issues, the board identified the following parameters that were important to us. One is that we wanted to make sure we maintained staff anonymity and confidentiality. Two was that we wanted to make sure we obtained credible and reliable information. And three, that maintaining, if not enhancing, the relationship between staff and the authority manager was critical. And therefore, the board has endorsed the filter-up approach of gathering employee feedback as is described in that summary memo. This program will begin between June 2021 and December 2021 and will be implemented by our authority manager. The questions that are provided in that summary are draft proposed options, and the authority manager will edit and choose questions that are appropriate for the employee, the position that the employee holds, and also the tenure of the employee. We decided the authority manager may check back in and consult with Mr. Fleming prior or after the program begins, and the feedback from this program to the board will be shared verbally and be a formal part of the employee review, the authority manager review. And although this discussion with the board may not, at least in the beginning, coincide with the authority manager's formal review date. So we'll get the two things synced up at some point, but in the beginning they won't necessarily sync up, and we've decided to start this program in June of next year, between June and December of next year, so that we don't get into what Mr. Fleming called the honeymoon period of the authority manager, which has all sorts of ups and downs to it and can affect feedback. So we will avoid that moving forward. At this point, are there any questions or comments on the information in your packet?
Carol, for Kurt, do you think this is enough time for you to get things kind of tweaked with the questions and to get everybody and the trust? I don't want us to rush into something, this is a well thought out, you think that's going to be enough time next June for you to?
Cameron, I appreciate your concern. It was something that, quite frankly, I wasn't even aware until I had the opportunity to work with Mr. Fleming and understand from someone who truly has a strong human resources background that kind of time would be necessary. But once I understood that, I've become more cautious, but I'm also very confident knowing our staff that I will be able to phrase questions in a manner in which I'm not going to offend any employees or even confuse any employees. I hope to do it in a very productive manner, and the sample questions that Mr. Fleming provided, I think, are going to be a great resource for me as we get started on that.
I just hope that the employees feel confident to be able to come to you, or I don't know, should we have another person? I don't know.
Cameron, that's a good question. Part of the filter-up process is this interaction between the authority manager and the employees, and we'll let that speak for itself and see how it works for us. Thank you. Tom?
I went through the report at length, and I noticed that this was strictly a way for the our employees to interact with the manager. And seeing as how the board reviews the manager's action with past experience with other organizations, I think there's a need here that hasn't been addressed. And one is, between employees, sometimes there can be intimidation and or I'm the top dog here, by God, this is the way we're going to be doing her. So when we talk to the boss, that's how we're going to do it. And so what I think it needs to happen for both the board and for our manager here is to have some sort of system of anonymous communication. As far as the board evaluating the manager on an annual basis, it'd be nice to have an anonymous opinion from individual employees if they so desire. Now, I know we're a small group, we all know each other pretty well, but day-to-day operations, with the exception of Carolyn as the chair and immediate supervisor of our manager, we don't have a whole lot of communications about how he reacts with the employees. And for, once again, for Kirk, I'm thinking, you know, if you have an employee who has a problem, they might be intimidated or feel uncomfortable bringing up a problem without an anonymous way to communicate. So that's the only thing I saw reading this report that really wasn't addressed. And I've literally run into this in larger organizations before, and you can get real creative at that, allowing some kind of anonymous communications. We can discuss it at length, but I think that should, especially for the board, making an evaluation of the manager, we should have a way to communicate with employees, or the employees communicate with us with concerns, either with operations or maybe even another employee. That's my two cents.
Thanks, Tom. Ann, do you want to respond?
Yeah, I appreciate that, and that is a real concern. I'm glad that you got a chance to read the report. What you don't see in the report, you will hear if you can make the time to listen to the recording, because there was a great deal of discussion of that very point. And the pros and cons of the various things you can do. And what we have in this report is the distillation of that whole conversation, which clearly we can't recreate here. I wouldn't even try. But really, if you can make the time to go listen to the full discussion, it's long and it's, but I think you'll see that we did address that very topic very directly. In the context of a small organization where we all know each other very well and we kind of live around the corner almost literally in some cases. And so I felt as though that was more than adequately addressed in the discussion.
So do you feel...
I hope you will too.
Do you feel a consensus of those participants that this kind of anonymous conversation is not necessary in our small organization?
It's a complicated issue, and there are a lot of levels to it, and I think that we did have a good and thorough discussion of all the levels and the issues. So I can't attempt in this setting, in this meeting, to recreate all of that and convey it to you, but I really do think if you listen to the meeting that you'll see that all of that, I feel at least, all of that came out in the discussion. So I think you'll feel as though it got a proper airing and the outcome came out of thorough discussion.
Yeah, I feel we did really hammer on that. And from Kurt's, from Ryan, the part of the HR part of it, of having a disgruntled employee and making bones about it in the way of this evaluation occurred. We discussed that quite lengthy. It was very good. It's just like I commented, it's just, are the employees gonna be able and feel comfortable? And you know, I think with things, the way things are going now with Kurt, I feel that the employees would be open and honest with him. I think that he's opened up a good communication with everybody. Certainly from my standpoint, one of the employees was reading the meters, and I asked him how's things going, and he had no complaints. You know, we're talking about, you know, how things were. I asked him about the meter system, and man, I got information. It's like Kurt didn't even tell me that. I mean, it was, he was well informed, and he was a younger employee, you know, and I'm fascinated. And I started asking Kurt about it, and he said, wow, it's, you know. So I feel like there is an open communication amongst everybody. That's from what I see. I can't speak the rest of the board, but, you know, my concern is, yeah, that it would be fair and a bias information so Kurt can do a better job. and that we can give him the tools to do his job. Bert is only as good as what we give him to do. So bad on us, then we failed him. And I don't want to do that. So anyway.
Thanks for your comment.
I can see Sean there. He's grinding away thinking.
Yeah, Tom, I think there wasn't consensus on that topic, and so I think the results, the questions that you see are a result of there not being consensus, and this is a step forward in that direction.
Thank you.
All right. Hearing no more comments at this point, we'll move on to item 7.2. That would be the automated reading meter reading alternatives. Kirk, I'll leave that to you.
Okay. I'd like to start by describing some of the reasons that I'm looking into moving forward with installing an automated meter reading system here at the authority. And first and foremost, manual meter reading involves a lot of labor. A lot of time is spent monthly reading meters. And so there's a cost associated with that. AMR systems, automated meter reading systems, improve the efficiency of staff. Is that not my
echo? No, I'm sorry. It's me.
Okay, how's that?
Better?
Are we better?
Yep.
Okay, so one of the main purposes in utilities across the country, in fact, the majority of utilities utilize some type of automated meter reading system. It improves efficiency. The cost for reading meters manually and for relying on automated meter reading equipment to read to get meter readings is, from what I was able to determine, are going to be roughly the same. One of the huge advantages to installing an automated meter reading system is significant improvements in water conservation. Rather than seeing what customers are using once a month, we'll be able to review consumption data on a daily basis. We can also identify with the system I would propose customer leaks on a daily basis. We would receive a leak report that would show customers that did not drop down to zero usage within 24 hours. It's just some of the benefits. There's other customer service benefits like a customer portal for customers to be able to review their own usage. Landlord access, if in case they have tenants that are excessively using water, they have access to seeing that. New and closed accounts can be done almost immediately. We don't have to manually go out into the field, get readings. And we would also be able to identify leaks in our system. Every day we know how much water we're having to produce and deliver to our water storage tanks. But without seeing the daily usage of our customers' usage, we could have a large leak out there and we wouldn't know it. This would give us much earlier notification when we have distribution system leaks. So those are some of the advantages to converting to an automated meter reading system. So if you go to my tables, and I start by going over the status quo analysis, and this is a cost-benefit analysis over 20 years. The status quo has the green header on the top, and it looks at the cost of manually reading meters by year. And if you look at the cost in year one, the total costs are roughly $34,000 that year. And it remains about that price throughout a 20-year period. I've tracked the first 10 years in this table, and then I've added to the value for the remaining 20 years. an automated meter reader system. Almost all of them, I've not seen one that was different. They have battery lives of 20 years. So this system can be anticipated to last for 20 years. And the total, I sort of got off track on the battery. I'm still looking at the status quo without meter reading. Over 20 years, our total cost equates to $689,469. Never mind. Let me start over. The total cost is $689,469 over 20 years. That's our cost to read meters. If you go to the second page, there's AMI System A, which in my opinion was the most cost-effective automated meter reading system available for us. In year one, we'd have an upfront capital cost of almost $400,000, but there would also be benefits happening concurrently. Initially, for year one, I would recommend that we install, replace all 1,450 meters in our system, and provide units that have radios, and we would also have the ability to drive by and collect meter reads in that manner. By year two, for the sake of budgeting, I would recommend that we don't purchase master radio equipment until the second year, when everything else is proved to be working efficiently. And then we could install master radios that would be capable of collecting all of our meter reading data throughout our system. This would open up many of those benefits I was describing earlier that come with AMR. And then there would be some annual costs associated with that. The software that is needed to access all of our data would come at a cost of about $1,394 per year, and the software maintenance would be another $804 on top of that. Our total 20-year cost analysis equated to $686,510. By a slight margin, that is the most cost-effective way to read meters over 20 years. I've also got an AMI system B, which is in the yellow border. And that AMI system B would have an initial capital cost of $464,255. With year two cost to convert the drive-by AMR system to an AMI system with master radios would be an additional $58,000. Over the cost of the 20-year life cycle, we'd have a total cost of $802,548. That was really the comparison of the three systems, status quo, AMI system A, and AMI system B. Of the three methods, I recommend that we plan to move forward with AMI system A. And if you go to the following table that I provided, AMI system A savings is the blue, completely blue borders, fourth page. It shows the savings that we would obtain each year by utilizing an AMI system. The first year, we would see a benefit of $23,000, and most of these are the cost of manually reading meters. And accumulating over 20 years, that equates to a total labor and cost per reading meters cost of $509,000 over 20 years. It would more than pay for the capital costs of our system. And then on the last page, and then I'll open it up for board questions, I summarized all of the benefits, starting with the quantitative meter reading costs over 20 years, As I mentioned before, I think I can be more clear when I compare them side by side. Status quo would cost us $689,469 over 20 years to read our meters. System A would cost us $686,510, roughly almost $3,000 less over 20 years. System B would cost us $802,548, costing us an additional $113,000 if we were to want to utilize that system. I think just as importantly is the qualitative benefits that come with automated meter reading. Improved efficiency I touched on. With system A and B, you get all of these benefits. With status quo manual reads, you receive none of these benefits. So you're with AMR, you receive improved efficiency, much improved water conservation and reduced water loss, daily consumption reports, a customer portal, daily leak reports, improved distribution system leak detection, improved employee safety. There are several hazards associated with going onto properties and reading meters. Unauthorized water use detection. We would have a means for being able to detect that much sooner. And even backflow detection reporting. These meters can identify when flow is moving backwards through one of the new meters. So with all of that said, I'm happy to answer any questions that the board might have.
Tom, go ahead.
You mentioned one of the benefits, quantitative benefits, is a customer portal. Are we referring to some sort of an individual access to our website, for example, of an individual customer's usage?
It wouldn't be our website, but it would actually be a hosted site that we would, all of our information would be collected and stored on at a location, utilizing whichever AMI system we choose to go forward with. They would host the software that provides us many of these alternatives.
Is that real time? Would that be real time monitoring or staggered, like, you know, daily?
It is staggered, and typically, in order to conserve battery life of our system, of our individual units, we would typically collect data on an hourly basis. And that's why, if say, and through the night, someone's usage doesn't drop below whatever we set it at. In this case, I'll use an example of a tenth of a gallon per minute, or two tenths of a gallon per minute. If it doesn't drop below that flow rate, then we'll get a report. And the next day, we'll see an exception report that shows that this list of homes had usage throughout the night. In most of those cases, those would be cases where they either have some type of leak on their property downstream of our meter, or a toilet stopper is stuck open and wasting water in that manner. So we have that exception report. We'd have the ability then to notify our customers that there may be a leak on their property. Sorry, Tom. I'll come right back to you, Tom, if that's okay.
That's fine.
As I have thought about that, it seems to me very similar to the Tillamook PUD's Smart Hub, where, because those are automatically read electrical meters and you can go into your PUD account, that the platform may be different in this instance than it is there, but you can go into the Smart Hub account and look at your electrical usage by day, by week, by month. You can compare years, you compare January to January 3 years ago. I mean, and so I think that is a major advantage of something like this, because it reinforces the concept that the homeowner or customer is largely responsible for the the internal monitoring of water usage and that sort of thing. And if there are leaks, it's, yes, we can identify them currently only once a month when we read meters. But I think responsible homeowners, if they see their bill fluctuating, will be concerned about that and will be able to use this tool to monitor their own account.
Or getting an oversized water bill.
Yes. Well, we'll be able to catch it earlier in the leak cycle and give them notice to correct it. And if they don't correct it, they would have a much harder time justifying any meter accuracy. It's pretty clear where the water is going. So, and to, but to get back to Ann's question, this technology really did develop in the electric industry. They've always had plenty of power available so that their meters could easily transmit this data and record this data. It's really been the last 20 years where the water industry has sort of followed suit and relying more on batteries to provide us the information from our meters.
So are we going to have to come up with a protocol on notifying people that they have a leak? And
It would be a relatively simple one. We're used to looking at reports currently that would give us a heads up, especially after a billing run at the end of the month. But this would be an automatically generated report that staff would look at and then determine whether or not someone needed to be contacted or not. And I don't want to forget to come back to Tom.
Well, I had a couple other comments. Looking at your analysis on System A and System B from strictly financial bottom line, it looks like A would be the most advantageous system, and my understanding, that's probably what you would recommend. My question about System A, in reference to last month's meeting, we were talking about the two different types of hardware that you had experience with or you had done some minor research with, and I'm assuming that's what both of these analyses are about. We talked about these meters that had both telemetry and analog component, where if one part broke down, you'd have to replace either the individual component, the telemetry or the analog, or whether you would have to replace the whole component. Is System A, where does System A fall in that discussion?
Good question, Tom. And I'd like to start by agreeing with you that System A is, in fact, my recommendation. You're correct there. And with that said, that is one of the reasons why I would recommend this system. But it's because the radio is one component and the meter is another component. Both of these components require a battery, though, and both of those have a life expectancy of 20-plus years. They're guaranteed for 10 years full replacement. The second 10 years is prorated. So systems I've used in the past, I'm very familiar. For 20 years, I've worked with AMR drive-by meter reading systems. And actually what sort of led me down this path is recently I discovered that the prices have come down to a point where you can upgrade to AMI and experience those daily read advantages, which I think are tremendous, and the cost has actually come down to a point to where it's very competitive with drive-by reads, in which you're still limited to just once a month reading. So System A offers both. It does have the separate radio and separate meter, and if the battery were to go dead or bad on either one, they could be replaced individually. This would become more important 15 years down the road if they start to fail, where we're having to contribute some of the cost to replace those items. We could replace one or the other. Whereas if system B, just by example, is one common unit, and there's nice features about that as well, but if either the radio were to fail or the meter were to fail, the whole unit has to be replaced. So in year 15, 16, and up to 20, system B could cost us more on replacement than system A would. So again, that's more justification for system A.
Well, my last comment is that I happen to personally think that going in this direction is a practical thing for the long haul. I just have a reservation about scrapping 1,400 devices, 700 of which were just purchased 9 years ago or 10 years ago, and they still have a usable life of an additional 20 years. And the only thing that we might be able to boot some of that investment if we did go and replace all 1,400 units is I'm looking at today's prices for scrap brass in Portland, and they, for mixed brass, is $2.60 a pound, and various other prices for example, brass pipe is $4.44, but you know, we would probably be thinking about something like mixed brass, so we could recoup some monies, but I still have a reservation about basically scrapping 20 years worth of use. So I was thinking that we might look at purchasing maybe the 700 that are much, much older, and work into this in a step pattern, or what's a better way to look at it? They buy and the basic system in the next year or so, and then 5 or 6 years down the road, convert the others so that we have more use out of those 700 fairly new ones that we purchased 10 years ago.
Do it in a phase, like what you're thinking, Tom?
Yes, phased array or phased conversion.
Yeah, and Tom, I don't think what you're proposing is a bad idea, but I also, because I have no desire to not utilize, you know, the full life of existing meters that have only been in place for, you know, 5 or 10 years, and a handful even much sooner than that. We've replaced a few recently that actually include radios, just in case we move down this direction. But the thing that I think would offset any of that, I hate to use the word, but I'll call it waste of some life remaining in those existing meters, is the cost. It costs us about $33,000 a year to manually read those meters, and I think that will make up for any of that loss that we would see from that. Also, there are other benefits about meter accuracy that the new meters would be able to provide. And I didn't mention this earlier, but the new meters are accurate to a level of 0.1 gallons per minute, whereas they can pick up reads that low. Our existing meters can only read down to 0.5 gallons per minute. So there's also some savings there. So I do believe the longer we push this out, the overall cost for the project will ultimately will lose out. And I'll just make one final comment, is, and I'm not trying to sell this project based on us saving money. I think we're going to gain a lot of benefits. But what I will try to sell this project based on is the fact that I don't think it could possibly cost us more to convert to an AMI system than manually reading. I think it's going to be very close.
Well,
Well, and lightening up the manpower of, you know, how many days of doing that. And then my question would be, how would it go from that to billing? It would be automatically directly?
The softwares are compatible. And so once the softwares are integrated, it eliminates some office work for our staff. And I included that in the cost-benefit analysis. Our staff will no longer have to manually input our meter readings into our billing software.
Well, and then another question. What as far as our, that would be the meters going to businesses and stuff. What about as far as the rest of our lines? Would it show anything else if we had a problem on the lines coming in?
If we look at our daily flows that were of produced water every day, what I don't see but once a month right now is how much we're billing our customers and how much volume they're using. With an AMI system, not the AMR wouldn't really provide us this. If we have to drive by, we're only going to do that once a month.
Right.
But once we convert in the second year to AMI, we can go to the cloud and download our data once a day and compare those two numbers. And if we have a water leak in our distribution system, we'll be able to see it within 24 hours. That doesn't mean we'll find it, but we'll know it's out there.
That now you've got something to go look yes. for. Right. Well, and couldn't you justify as far as between other meters and stuff? Kind of to where to zero in on it between meters?
I forgot to mention, there's other components that can be added to this system, like audiometric leak detection equipment for relatively low cost, like a couple hundred dollars per pod. You could add leak detection devices throughout our distribution system. And they typically collect readings in the middle of the night when other noises don't interfere, and they follow patterns, and they can also alert us of any leaks that might be in there in our system. So that's something I would no doubt at some point want to implement.
Well, there for a while when we were having big freezes and stuff, I know there was a lot of busted pipes. And homeowners, and that was a costly bill to them, and then for us to get out there and get it fixed. I think it's a great idea, and I'd like to move forward with your suggestion. I think it would be beneficial for our district.
I don't want to interrupt the board. That's probably something you all should discuss. I did want to say that there are some purchasing options I'd like to look into, and of course, it would be brought up at the next meeting, but with board support of this project, I would at least like to look at those, or tentative support, I should say. I would like to look at those purchasing options to see how we could purchase this for the best possible price.
Ann?
I've got a few things, and Kirk, thank you again for answering everything that I raised in the email, and you really did clarify a lot for me because I wasn't sure I could tell from the charts what the equipment details were, and so you gave me a lot of background on that. That was very helpful. One of the things that I'm going to get back to my email here, so you did clarify in that process that the first year it would be drive-by reading, the second year all of the automatic reading would be installed in both of these systems, and so the ultimate goal is accomplished in both of these. Last month when we discussed this briefly, you said at the end of your discussion that there were other companies that you wanted to look into. Or maybe it was in conversation that you and I had, but I'd like to make sure that it sounds like there's support, general positive feelings about this amongst a lot of us on the board. I'd like to make sure that, that we take the time for you to thoroughly consider any other options that might be out there. And of course, you're knowledgeable about all of this, so you know where to go to find them. So, and that's not something that we have expertise or should be doing. But one of the things I'm concerned about, and actually there are a few, I'm kind of wondering if giving you a little more time to do a little more homework on vendors and that sort of thing, and some of the process questions that I'm going to raise, I think it might be useful, because this is a big change, and it's obviously, although the funds are already in the budget for this current year, it's a major expenditure. So I'm going to suggest that we schedule a workshop that's completely dedicated to this topic, so that we can fully examine not just the technical aspects of this, but some of the functional aspects of it too. And just as an example, one of the things that we have to do in this authority within our district, many years ago, and I can't even tell you when it is, maybe Michelle knows, but we had to go to a system where we locked off the meters because we had so many homeowners trying to turn off their own meters when they left during the winter or something like that, and we had a lot of damage, and then we had a lot of headache trying to get the homeowner to take responsibility for that and pay for the damage. And so the board at that time decided to just simply lock off the meters, and we are available 24/7 to turn things on or off. So, and that part has worked well, but I'm concerned that this system, from our conversation, doesn't allow for that. And I think we need to discuss the ramifications of how we would function as an authority, given that concern. The other thing that raises for me is a question about person shutoff valves. And person shutoff valves are required now for all new construction. And I can't tell you how many dwellings or how many of our customers have those. I don't know if Michelle and Rochelle or you have those records, or if we even know. But I would like to suggest that the board have a full discussion about whether or not to require personal shutoff valves for all customers in the transition to this kind of a system. So that we don't face that problem of people trying to shut off their water and breaking the meters, as they're pretty expensive. So I think that would be a policy discussion. I think it would benefit from more board discussion than is practical to do in a regular business meeting. So those are a couple of my concerns, and I think a workshop will give us an opportunity to really fully explore those and concerns that other board members have or along the way.
Thanks, Ann. Tom?
I agree with you. I think the workshop idea is a great idea. As a person with a techie background, I'd like to see some of these technical brochures, presentations, or whatever from the vendors involved, as well as give you some time to research some other vendors and similar systems. But I'd like to understand the technology a little more by looking at brochures and research, do some research on my own. I highly agree that a workshop is a good place and a good way to explore some of these concerns. That's all I have.
Thank you, Ann.
I did have one other thing, and I'm looking through the email that you sent me, Kirk, and I can't find the language, but the procurement thing where one of the cities already negotiated a price, and we may or may not be able to use that, and which made me start thinking about, okay, the bid process. I did a little bit of reading about those collective, is that what it's called? Collective procurement?
Cooperative procurement.
And I think there are, from a fiduciary and a legal responsibility of the board, I think that's a whole other set of issues that we need to be informed about, and we're going to need legal counsel to examine that cooperative agreement and see if we indeed have an opportunity to participate. And what I read said something about going out for bids and public notice, and I'd like to completely understand the legal and fiduciary responsibilities that the board holds for making these decisions and what the bid process is and all of that. So again, I think that's something that could be on the agenda for the workshop.
Wouldn't that be any different than any other big projects that you guys have done in the past?
Well, that's the question.
Yeah, I would say the only difference is we're aware of a cooperative procurement that is available to us from a neighboring, not a near neighbor, but a regional neighbor that could perhaps save us some money. So I believe the cooperative procurement process is one option. The only other alternative I know of would be go to competitive bid for it. Those are the two options we do have to consider, and both of them would require some legal advice before I would move forward with either one of those options. So those are the things that I'm happy to look into almost immediately, and I could be prepared for whatever or whenever the board wants to discuss in more detail.
Thank you.
Sean, any questions or comments?
Yeah, just briefly, I guess I'm a little concerned about a workshop only in the sense that I kind of feel like this is the kind of stuff that Kirk should be making decisions on, and you know, as a whole, I think the board can either support it or not support it. I just worry that a workshop starts stepping on his toes and starts getting into the things that I think, you know, are the responsibilities that he needs to be handling. Having said that, there is one comment I do have for you, Kirk. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to look to see if any other authorities on the coast have stepped into this kind of thing or implemented this kind of thing. My experience with electronics on the coast has not been very good. So I would want to make sure that 20-year life cycle really holds out for sticking electronics in the ground that is likely to be full of salt water at times. So there's that.
That's a very valid point. And I appreciate your comments regarding my authority. And I'm very comfortable with board input. The one thing I might caution the board about is the time it would take for each type of AMR system to present itself could be very extensive. Throughout my career, I'm familiar with about four or five systems that I know work well. Some are very expensive. But I definitely have some more work to do to determine who the best system would be. But ultimately, if we do go out for bid, then I have no objection to additional board input, but I will need to evaluate each of those systems separately to determine which would work best for us.
What would be our best application for our area, you know, like the sand and corrosion and right?
And I do believe I've seen systems that can address the saltwater sand issue. It just turns out System A actually has epoxy potted electrical components just for that reason. So the AMR industry has really progressed, although we're not the center of their world, so we may have some challenges. I'm more concerned about the radio communications, but their proposals are actually, they've done radio, System A and System B have done radio path surveys and verified the accuracy in which they could collect reads from our system. So that's a given. If they can't meet that with what they propose and quote us, then they're going to have to add additional radios at their expense.
And I definitely agree with Sean in terms of the board getting too involved in Kirk's business. Kirk is our leader of the operations and technical side of things. I wouldn't presume to question his judgment on which system is better technically. And I do think that is his job and not ours. I do still think a workshop would allow us, though, to get questions of a variety of other issues out on the table, just so we feel that. And so Kirk would have an opportunity to explain things in greater detail to us so that we understand it. And I wouldn't hear that information and argue with him. I just want to hear it because it's a lot of money and it's a big expenditure. And I'd like to understand it and feel like I can, in good conscience, fully support whatever we decide to do. The other thing I would just point out, I did a little homework on the internet, and it wasn't extensive or thorough by any means, but Seal Rock has one of these systems. And that was the only one I saw that was on the coast, but I'm sure places like Newport and things like that, cities like that, may very well have systems like this too. So I'm sure there are coastal installations that if you were curious about weather conditions on the coast and how that affects things.
Certainly. I will definitely do more research in that area.
Seal Rock put theirs in, I think, according to my note, in 2018, so it hasn't been there for very long, but they must have thought through that same issue, I would guess.
And you know, a lot of utilities have actually that were a little ahead and did this 10, 15 years ago. At that time, AMR systems were the most cost-effective way to go. But AMI has progressed to the point where you can get those daily reads for almost the same cost. And so that's really sort of opened my eyes to that. So timing could be right. It seems that, you know, I don't think there's a lot of systems that... especially of our size, that already have AMI systems in place. It's more about timing, but there's a lot of them who have AMR because nobody likes manually reading me.
Okay, if I can chime in for a minute here. Tom, I wanted to go back to one thing that you addressed with regards to a potential phase-in option. It was interesting because as you said that, and then Kirk responded, one of the things that I thought about is that if we're able to have a way to know that we've got a leak, we know that we've got a lot of pipe that we're going to be replacing over the next 10 years. If we can find those leaks more cost effectively because of this system and do that replacement that we know we're going to have to do, we may save all the money from the waste of the meters by having the technology available at this point and doing catching those leaks sooner and fixing those lines in a way that we wouldn't have a way to decide about it at this point in time. So that may or may not be helpful. Based on all the discussion, I'm wondering if we might look at a pre-phase process before the next meeting. If maybe in week one we got the board additional data, one on maybe the names of Kirk's favorite AMI or AMR systems, ones that he's worked with, and websites so that we could individually go and get more information about different companies if we wanted to. And then the other piece of the data that Kirk and I would approach legal and find out that information in terms of where we are with going out for the low bid or being able to use a cooperative agreement and getting that information out to the board. Then at week two, we ask the board to identify all their current questions and send those back to Kirk. And then in week three, before the next board meeting, we do an informative short workshop where Kirk would present additional information and answer those questions that we submitted. Hopefully that would take that workshop down to an hour. And if somebody couldn't attend, they could get that information from listening to the MP3 file. So it would be a different sort of workshop, not so much board discussion, but getting board members additional information in order to then go into our October meeting with then that discussion about whether or not this is the best thing for the authority and whether or not the board wants to move forward. Does that sound like a good process and options?
Yep.
I think so. I think that's well-organized approach.
John?
More time for each process there, Kurt?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do it in that manner. I also, if it were my role, I'd also give a thumbs up to that approach.
John, comments?
Yeah, I'd be available for any seminars in the second half of September due to harvest, but I can certainly, you know, review stuff and correspond via email.
That's why I was kind of thinking about it. If we had left it all to a workshop in September, we'd be leaving you out of the process. So if we can stage it in different ways, we'll make sure that we have your input.
Yep.
Okay, then Kirk and I will work on that and put that in place since we've got support from the board. All right, item 8. Guest questions and comments. Kirk, did you receive anything from our customers this month?
No questions. Sorry, I hadn't checked my emails in a bit, but the one I just received wasn't related to the board meeting. So no questions.
Thank you. Then item 9, director comments. Any comments?
We had discussed, Tom had brought up about doing possibly open meeting. So with the COVID in November, kind of maybe changing things. What's everybody's thought process there?
Cameron, my understanding is at this point with the extension of the emergency order that's probably not something that we want to do. And if we were looking at that, we have a community center. I think you had shared with us a limit of 25 people. And if you take the board and staff and subtract that, that looks like that would be that we were doing a community meeting for probably 12 to 15 people.
Okay.
And I'm not sure that that's, we want to say to the public, come to our meeting, but only 15 of you can really
yeah.
So I think we're going to have to put that concept on hold.
Okay.
For a little bit later. Thank you. Anyone else, Sean?
I do still think it's important to try to get a public meeting on of some sort scheduled, even if it means it's only 15 people. I think it would be more than that if I remember the meeting that the commissioners held, but certainly not significantly more than that. And I think we're going to see the governor extending the state of emergency for the next year. So I don't think we're getting out of this anytime soon. So I still think it's important at some point in the next 6 months to have a public meeting.
Sean, would you be open to a public meeting on this on a platform if we could set it up so that people that didn't have cell phones or computers could call in?
Are you talking about basically just an extension of a BlueJeans? I mean, not having an in-person meeting?
Correct.
I still like the idea of an in-person meeting. That's my opinion.
I agree.
I'd like to see, you know, a meeting. And
In the best of all possible worlds, I would like to see that too. I have one major concern, which is the pandemic and safety for everybody involved, and that kind of thing. But offsetting, well, kind of related, is that our experience when we have done public meetings has been, to my way of thinking, pretty discouraging in terms of public involvement. And so I guess in spite of massive attempts, I think, on the office, the authority to try to generate interest in coming to meetings, very often, unless there's something that people want to complain about, people don't come out to meetings just to have a conversation. So I kind of like the idea of an electronic version of it as a step toward that. I think it might give us a way to gauge interest, and if we had a lot of involvement, then we would also capture the nature of people's questions and concerns, so that when we were able to schedule an in-person meeting, we could use that list of questions and concerns to structure that meeting, and then, of course, allow for open discussion of other things as well, of course.
I saw Daryl at the bank, and Daryl doesn't have any electronic devices. And usually he comes to our meetings, but he's been having some health issues. But I asked him, I said, would you be interested on BlueJeans? And that's when he told me. He doesn't have any of these devices, and I don't know how many people in the community that don't.
So yeah, he went from a telephone that he could use to dial in, and the teleconferencing opportunities require a basic telephone.
Okay.
So that's how I listen to the Board of Commissioners meetings and the Parking Advisory Committee meetings and all that kind of thing. They have a telephone number you call, and then you punch in the conference ID number, and then you just listen. So I think that kind of thing would work for most people.
I disagree.
I think this is all good discussion, but since this was not an item on the agenda, we'll need to put it on the agenda for next month, and what we could do is maybe prepare some information and some options. And take a look at it so that we could have a discussion and make a decision about it.
Okay.
Great. Maybe we could do some research with the Kiwanis Center and see exactly what the details are at this point with capacity and what the protocols are and all that kind of thing. So it might give us an opportunity to get some real specific answers to those questions.
All right. Tom, one more comment?
I noticed in this latest issue of the Pacific City Sun that our meeting tonight concerning the automated system was highlighted in that article, and no one seemed to really care. And this is why, because they aren't here or participating, this is why I think when we're dealing with, serious large-scale things, that a public meeting is a, face-to-face meeting, even if it's 25 or 30 people, is a good idea. And there's nothing better than, looking at someone in the eye. And personally, I'm getting sick and tired of dealing with this type of meeting. And the circumstances are what they are. But here we had really good advertising, for lack of a better expression, or exposure to the subject matter tonight, and no one said in any kind of comment. So that disturbs me. I think a person-to-person meeting at something like Kiwanis Community Center, once again, is a good idea.
And just a quick question, for Michelle or Rochelle or Kirk, can we tell after our meeting is done and the MP3 is posted to the website, can we tell how many people listen to that or log into it?
No.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we'll do some research and put the item of a public meeting on the agenda for the October meeting. All right, it is 6:34 and we are adjourned. Thank you all very much.